It's October 2013. I want you to turn back the clocks in your mind. Turn them back all the way. What do we do here at Shipwreck?
Well, we pick a book every month, and we pick six characters from that book, and then we assign those characters to six writers, and we ask them to write some erotic fan fiction, and then we read them anonymously to the audience.
Amy Stevenson, Case Childers, produced this program. Stephen Westall is our resident thespian, and this takes place at the Booksmith, and we'll get into that later. But like for right now, the book, what's important is the book, and it is The Shining by Sir Stephen King. As knighted by the Fangoria princes of 1997. So let's just get right into the first character from
there's,
The
Shining. There's going to be a lot of ghost sex, I think, is what we're trying to say to you right now.
Spooky.
Spooky.
So light a candle, pour yourself a glass of Chablis.
Chablis.
Eat a mutton chop. And huddling close to somebody you love who may have passed away ever so short a time ago. You creep.
So first up, we have the hipster caretaker who was murdering his family before Jack Torrance made it cool. Delbert Grady was his name.
Delbert Grady. Oh, the people you'll kill. My past is mysterious. My motives are shady. But nobody ever dares doubt Delbert Grady. The Overlook's secrets are known only to me. So join me inside and I'll show you. Come see. It's a tiring job, but someone's got to do it. This season is harsh, but we've got to get through it. If you mind the boiler and re-shingle the roof, why, I tell you, this place could be cold weather proof. Watson's no fool, so take his advice. Keep the outlook well heated to stave off the ice. But if you don't watch it, the boiler gets screwy, and pretty soon, bam, slam, bang, and kablooey. I was the caretaker once, long ago. That winter, I killed all the family I know. I hacked and I thwacked, and I swung my hatchet. With a backhand so fierce, Don Budge couldn't match it. So what made me snap? What drove me to slaughter? Why, this evil hotel, it told me I oughta. Now I'm telling you, despite my abhorrence, that you've gotta do the same thing, Mr. Torrance. Now, I know what you're thinking. This man is insane. You've never had murderous thoughts in your brain. You broke your son's arm in a mad drunken stupor, but now you're stone sober, and everything's super. But once this hotel has your soul in its grip, it takes you on one scary, mind-blowing trip. With decaying ladies in tubs that go drip, and ghostly bartenders you don't need to tip. Your family's souls are ripe for collecting. Your naughty relations are in need of correcting. But then what do you do when the killing's all done? You'll have so much free time with a dead wife and son. I have some advice, and I hope that you'll heed it. Some caretaking wisdom in case that you need it. The best way to stave off that old cabin fever is plenty of booze and even more beaver. This place is haunted by ghosts big and small, and I'm happy to tell you that I've banged them all. From the dead chambermaid that keeps the rooms clean, to the ghostly wet vixen in 217. She was a goer, I put her on top, and watched her big bosom go flippity-flop. I sucked them until her brown nipples erected, and these were the days when we fucked unprotected. She soaked up her finger and slipped it inside my receptive asshole, and I smiled wide. Though her body was pallid and falling apart, the dead slut earned a special place in my heart. But what of the chambermaid, young Mrs. Vickery? She seduced me with guile and coquettish trickery. She gave me a wink and unbuttoned her coat, and 10 seconds later had my dick down her throat. She sucked like a hoover and cooed like a bird. She gargled my balls without saying a word. Working the shaft like a veteran miner, she gobbled my meat like a Black Angus diner. Her skill was impressive. Her vigor was rare. I tightened my grip in her long raven hair. She smiled when I moaned. My instructions she followed. And you better believe that chambermaid swallowed. On Saturday nights, I would head to the ballroom. The elegant, swelligant, gold on the wall room. You never have seen such a cavernous tall room. A usually empty, nobody at all room. But if I was lucky, from out of the void would appear my buddy, the bartender Lloyd. Set him up, I would say. I've earned me a drink for killing my whole family, don't you think? One night I was swimming in martini heaven when in walked a flapper from 1927. She had gams up to there, and her ass wouldn't quit. Even F. Scott Fitzgerald would have lost his shit. But I summoned my courage and got her a whiskey. She drank it and gave me a look rather frisky. I knocked back my own. She said, "Thanks for the round. Is liquor the only thing that you're going to pound?" Next thing you know, we're out in the shed. I didn't even care how long she'd been dead. I ripped off her bloomers, saying, "You better bet I like dry martinis and pussies all wet." That little wet coochie was conga drum tight as I thrust inside of her with all of my might. She begged me to spank her. I did with a smack. She wrapped my strong arms round the small of her back. Just at that moment, we both heard a sound like twigs being snapped on the cold winter ground. We looked out the window. What came into view? A topiary lion watching us screw. He was thorny and bristly and made out of shrubbery. His leaves were all dying. His limbs were all rubbery. The winter had given him one awful cough, but that didn't stop the old cat from beating off. We both froze in fear and tried to be cautious, but we didn't mind if the big fellow watched us. So I gave him a wink and pressed on with my duty, plowing my cock into that ghost flapper's booty. I know, Mr. Torrance, I've strayed from my topic. You didn't come here to discuss the erotic. I could go on, I've got stories galore. You won't believe what I did on the food pantry floor. I've had my fun, and I won't try and hide it. A blowjob from Dogman? Don't knock it till you've tried it. But murder's the reason that fate brought you here. And murder you shall. It is that time of the year. But remember, if you do your vocation well, carnal delights lurk around this hotel. And if you see the lady in her tub in the bedroom, remember this fact. Her safe word is red room.
Can I tell you how much I love Spencer Bainbridge?
He's pretty magical. And he wore like an amazing tie that floats in the air.
That guy.
He's a good tie.
He's just so gentlemanly.
He is.
Who even does that anymore?
He brings some much needed dignity to the show, I think.
And to San Francisco in general. Who even wears a tie here?
Also true.
That was Delbert Grady as written by Spencer Bainbridge. That wasn't his voice. That was Stephen Westall's voice, which we already told you, but just to remind you, you'll keep hearing that voice. All of these writers don't sound the same. That's just how we build the show.
So our next character is described on Wikipedia as a weak woman, but we here at Shipwreck, and I think I speak for you, Casey, when I say that having a husband possessed by ghosts in an abandoned hotel in the middle of nowhere might make you slightly more complicated than just being a weak woman.
Having any husband, am I right?
Am I right? Wendy Torrance.
Wendy. Wendy wanted a nice hot roast. Did she ever. Every time Jack would press his boner into the folds of her dress, she'd say, "Get away, fly." She hankered for a different kind of meat. Hollerin the cook had shown her around the Overlook Hotel's kitchen and walk-in freezer, rattling off the goodies, and Wendy was sick of rib roast. A dozen canned hams, 20 pounds of burger, a leg of lamb, 10 roasts of pork, and 10 roasts of beef. My word, was all Wendy could say about the smart-looking beef she knew she'd soon whip into a plump rib roast. Jack had said, "I can see your nipples." Wendy reddened. Must be the temp in the freezer, if only. That same day, Watson, the on-season caretaker, had given Wendy a lecherous wink. Watson knew Wendy was nasty and a roast fucker. The Overlook certainly knew, even if Wendy didn't. Yet, Jack might hate those yellow pants of hers, but the roasts wouldn't mind unflattering pants that made a rump look plump, not one bit. Roasts like yellow pants. Roasts like them even better rolled up in the corner of the kitchen. All in due time, thought foul-minded Watson. All in due time. As soon as Holler and Watson left town for the off-season, Wendy took to wearing those hideous yellow pants every day. Then, one night in the kitchen, Wendy basted juice over two roasts with their pan juices. Squeeze, squish, squeeze, squish. Why was she roasting two roasts at once? Jack hadn't heard Wendy say, "Oh, is that what you want me to do, you well-endowed provisions?" It seems that the roasts were talking only to her, but only she could hear what the roasts were saying. Another night, Wendy had come to bed far too late, stinking of char and all season. The next morning in the kitchen, Jack brought it up. "You came to bed late," Jack said. "It wasn't so late," said Wendy. "You were practically in a food coma, stumbling around. Thank God you didn't wake Danny. Don't talk to me about how to braise my son." "You mean raise your son. Fuck you," Wendy said. And preheated the oven to 375. "I wish you would," Jack said. "What do you expect?" Wendy said, retrieving the salt, pepper, and garlic powder. "Someone around here has got to get the dinner worked up." "Don't do this," Jack said, and hurriedly locked the freezer with a second padlock. "It's my kitchen, you bastard!" Jack slapped Wendy, and her cheeks smarted. She sobbed. She buried her face in Jack's red flannel, letting her tears soak into it. Jack stood motionless. "I want you to apologize. You want me to apologize for calling you a bastard?" Wendy said. "All right, I apologize. I'm sorry. You still shouldn't have locked up the roast. I just want the roast. Please, just give me the roast. Wendy," Jack said, "I'm worried." Wendy thought, then nodded and said, "Would you think I was foolish if I made an appointment for a physical? There's a GP in Sidewinder. Maybe he can cure me of my roast-driven hysteria." The GP examined Wendy's vagina and said, "There are a lot of possible explanations for your vagina behaving as badly as it does." The GP then spoke to her as if he was speaking to a mental defective. "Listen," he said, "you really got a roast fucking addiction problem. Get a hold of yourself, for the sake of your husband and your children." While Wendy was at the GP in Sidewinder, Jack found an invitation from 1945 among the papers in the boiler room. It read, "Horace M. Derwent requests the pleasure of your company at a roast to celebrate the grand opening of the Overlook Hotel. Roast will be served at 8, porking at midnight." "Roast at 8? Porking at midnight? Horace Derwent, the tycoon who owned the Overlook?" Jack's mind reeled. In the fire of the furnace behind Jack appeared the face of Gravy, the former caretaker, who's mysteriously killed his family by drowning them in a butter bath and then cooking them and himself in the furnace. Gravy, smoked and dripping in a baked sweat, said, "The party's upstairs, Jack. Join the fun." Somehow, Jack was in the ballroom, and he didn't know how he got there, getting tanked on invisible dry martinis. Martians, as he and his old friend Al called them, dancing the conga with roasts of rib, who were eerily synchronized in step. The walk-in freezer had unlocked by itself. Wendy was shocked to return home from the doctor's to find the party of her roast lovers sandwiching Jack in a conga line. She grabbed Jack's arm and sniffed at his breath. "Are you drunk?" Jack slurred. "You haven't faced your addiction, have you, Wendy? You're drunk on roast every night. Every night, you bitch! The conga music stopped. The roast stood around awkwardly. Just then, the clock wound and struck midnight. The elevators upstairs opened, and waves of hot gravy flooded the stairs. Dear God, what is happening? Wendy said as the roasts closed in on her, stripping her of her yellow pants and guiding her on all fours into a puddle of streaming gravy. The roasts relinquished their hard meat from their confines and primed Wendy for the feast of her life. Hollerin burst through the door. I came all the way from Florida, whoa, and surveyed the scene of roasts filling Wendy in all holes while other roasts jacked off all over her back in thick spurts of butter, only to be replenished by fresh roasts that had been waiting in line. Jack waving his arms in a drunken rage. See what I've had to put up with? She's more like my mother every day. A dishwrapped mop of a woman, sopping up the butter of every piece of meat she finds. Hollerin continued, I came all the way from Florida and weathered a series of various life-threatening risks, first on a turbulent plane in the smoking section, and then in a Hertz rental from Denver through the worst snowstorm since 1969, with no gloves and nothing but folk music on the radio, and then a snowmobile by which the way I'd never driven in my life. I hate snow, and then I fought a lion that was really a bush, because I'm a black man who loves this white family so much. You fucked these roasts, Mrs. Torrance, and now these roasts have the same power your boy Danny's got, because he came from you, dig? Your vagina seems to be hosting some powerful shine. It's a shine gatekeeper. Might have to take a look. My vagina, or the roasts, Wendy said, bucking wildly against two roasts who found their rhythm. A third roast popped the head of its engorged flank back into Wendy's mouth and continued humping her face. These roasts, Mrs. Torrance, we've got to look at these roasts and your vagina. Wendy yanked her butter-greased mouth off the flank and croaked in a smoker's voice that was not her own. Rib roast. Rib roast. The dead woman from 217, Hollerin said. Oh, dear God, she's possessed, said Jack. Rib roast!
That was Wendy Torrance, as written by an anonymous donor.
So now we're going to check in with the masquerade ball that never ends. If you didn't read the book, you should probably know before we get started that there's no hedge maze in the book. Instead, there are these enormous topiary animals that come alive and chase each other around. So we can't wait to see what kind of shenanigans those guys get into. The Overlook Hotel.
The Overlook Hotel. Mommy, what's that rabbit doing to that buffalo? Wendy Torrance stared in disbelief. Danny had been so quiet as of late, retreating into his own world. Her husband Jack said it was because Danny was artistic, thanks to Wendy insisting Danny get vaccinated, and the vaccinations made him this way, in Jack's word, as worthless as tits on a bull. But Jack had been a grade-A idiot as of late, and Wendy found his lack of faith in science disturbing. Really, since coming to the Overlook, Jack hadn't been himself at all, which was why she'd taken to carrying a Louisville Slugger with her at all times. She hadn't seen Jack in days. He stayed at his table in the Overlook's lobby, working away at his novel, that or hiding away somewhere deep in the hotel's obscure areas. Danny seemed disturbed, said that the hotel was talking to him. Wendy wished she hadn't come here at all, wished she and Jack had just called it quits, that she'd gone to the Bahamas with Sybil McMurdy, who said the drinks were big and the cabana boys were bigger. Bigger in the places that counted, anyway. And that for a lousy $20 and a fifth of god-awful rum, you could ride that ride all night long and into the next day. as long as your hangover didn't keep you in bed and, Mommy? Wendy came back to the moment, stunned that she'd left that moment all considering what she saw before her on the old hotel's frozen lawn, the topiary, the hedges that had been meticulously shaped and cut so that they looked like giant animals. They'd come alive. Mommy? Yes, Danny, Wendy said in a rush. Yes, honey, I see it. A few minutes ago, Danny had told her the topiary animals were moving, doing things to each other. Wendy had brought Danny out here to show him that nothing of the sort was happening, and yet she saw it with her own eyes. So, Mommy, what are they doing? Are they playing? Wendy Torrance didn't know what to say. The animals weren't playing. They were fucking. The shrubbery rabbit had mounted the shrubbery buffalo and was humping away like, well, like a jackrabbit. The shrubbery buffalo craned its head into the night sky and let out a long bray. Mommy, is the rabbit hurting the buffalo? No, honey, Wendy said. The buffalo's fine. Fine like I would be if I was playing human ring toss with one of those cabana boys instead of freezing my tits off in this nightmare land. She shifted the baseball bat, reaching down and grabbing Danny's hand. Come on, honey, let's go inside. She'd almost turned to go when she heard a voice, the only other voice she would hear in the middle of buttfuck nowhere, Istan, Colorado. It's time to take your medicine, Jack Torrance said. Wendy looked at him. Her husband, standing on the porch, blocking the entrance to the hotel. He must have come out right behind them. She held the bat in front of her. The only medicine dished out here will be dental work, Jack. If you take one step closer, a tug on Wendy's sleeve. Mommy, how come Daddy's not wearing pants? Jack was naked. She hadn't even noticed. His cock hung limp and flaccid, although, truth be told, that wasn't really any different than the way it had been for the last 5 years of their marriage. Jack Torrance wasn't exactly tearing it up in the sex department. There was some kind of gray stuff smeared all over his genitals, thighs, and stomach. Jack, Wendy said, what have you been doing? Jack saw where Wendy was looking. He looked down at himself, seemed to see the gray mess for the first time. I fell. He said. Where? And why were you naked when you did it? Jack started to speak, but stopped. His mouth hung open. I know where, Danny said. Room 203, where the woman... Wendy felt her temper taking control. Oh, the woman's! So there's some floozy in this hotel, Jack. And you said you were hard at work on your novel. Jack held up his hands in what police would call a defensive posture. He didn't look crazy anymore. He looked like a man had been caught with his pants down. Or his pants off, in this case. Well, Jack, Wendy said. She did. Is she some young thing? Is she younger than me? Wendy felt a tug on her sleeve. She's older than you, Danny said. She's like 90. And she's dead. Oh, Wendy said. This just got more insane by the second. Well... We couldn't very well fool around with a ghost. Jack crossed his arms. Exactly. Frankly, Wendy, I'm offended at your accusation. He shook his head. When he did, his cock flopped a little bit from left to right. A scrap of something gray and wrinkled flipped off of it and vanished in the snow at his feet. Danny pointed to the topiary animals. Mommy, what are the lions doing to each other? Wendy looked. She had no idea what they were doing. That is a dirty Sanchez, Jack said. For sure. First line is giving the second line a dirty Sanchez. And what the third line is doing to that cow, that's a rusty trombone. Oh, no, 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 sorry. That is definitely a Cincinnati bow tie. Mommy, Danny said. What's a Cincinnati bow tie? Jack cleared his throat and then spoke impatiently in a fatherly tone. Danny, when two people, or two hedges in this case, love each other very much, sometimes a woman lies on her back and the man straddles her. Jack, Wendy said, this isn't time for that. You're walking around naked in 20 below weather with some kind of great cake batter on your nasty business. Danny thinks he's talking to ghosts, and the goddamn topiary is alive!
Alive and well, judging by the looks of things, Jack said. Real well. You know, I used to work for a landscaping company. I could trim that lady's topiary. Danny looked to his father. The boy didn't seem in the least bit bothered that the walking hedges were having some kind of deviant orgy in the snow-covered lawn. Did she have nice hedges, Dad? Her hedges were righteous, man, Jack said. He scratched madly at his dick and balls. He had this wild look in his eyes, the same kind of look he had when he'd come home snozzed to the gills. Was he drinking? If he was, did Wendy even care? There were fucking hedge animals putting hedge things into hedge holes. Her husband's alcoholism ranked a distant second to that. Danny pointed again. Now the rabbit is doing something weird to the cow. Arabian goggles, Jack said. Definitely. Wendy waggled the end of the bat an inch from her husband's nose. Dad, going yard means to hit a home run, Danny said. Jack stared at the end of the bat. Good to know, son. Say one more dirty bird thing, Jack, Wendy said. Say one more goddamn dirty bird thing, Jack, and I'll go yard on your skull, I swear to God. Jack scratched his junk again. You're pretty itchy down there, Jack, Wendy said. You've really been going at Big Jim and the twins since you came outside. Anything you want to tell me about what happened in room 203? Jack suddenly turned red, blinking rapidly. Tell you? Why, no. What are you talking about? Wendy here just being crazy. I mean, it's not like I fucked a dead lady. And if I did, I most certainly did not teabag her. Or give her a hot Carl. Most certainly. He was lying. A wife knows. And Wendy was his wife. How could he do this to them? You found a ghost and you fucked it, Wendy said. Apparently, a rotting ghost. You found zombie poon and you stuck your prick into it, didn't you, Jack? Tell the truth. You banged the ghost lady in 203. Jack stared and then shrugged. Yeah, he said. I banged her. Why, Jack? Why did you do this to her? Well, he looked back at the sprawling hotel. The overlook seemed to stare back at him, at her, at Danny, at the three lions who were now all apparently trying to shove their oversized shrub cocks into the cow's mouth at the same time. The cow seemed to be enjoying it. Jack met her glare, and he smiled. Because, he said, and smiled, sometimes dead is better.
That was The Overlook Hotel, as written by... We have a long tradition of best-selling writers on our program.
We do.
And this is no...
A long five-show tradition.
We have a long five-show tradition of best-selling writers participating in our live program. The Overlook Hotel was written by Scott Sigler, author of Contagion.
Contagion was the newest one. Next up... Are we back?
Yeah,
are we doing
back.
It? Okay.
Back.
Next up, he's going to let the pressure in the boiler build and build until it explodes. Noted screenwriter and family killer, Jack Torrance.
Wendy rolled away so that she faced away from Jack, and her breasts, which he'd been trying to fondle, were no longer in reach. She pulled the blanket tight around her body. I'm just not in the mood, honey. She was never in the mood, Jack reflected bitterly. Their stay at the Overlook Hotel wasn't just rough due to isolation, the freezing cold and the snow. It was the monotony and Wendy's complete refusal to put out. All work and no play. Fine, Jack said. Fine! He threw the covers off and stumbled out of their room, hoping the cold might take care of his now painful erection. He'd masturbated furiously into the bathtub in 217 before, and now he could do it again. He smirked a shit-eating smirk, thinking how spooked Danny was by the room. It was like the kid could read his mind sometimes. As he ambled down the long, seemingly endless hallways of the Overlook, Jack's resentment grew. Where did Wendy get off being so withholding? She was his wife, letting him penetrate her hedge maze was well within the confines of her wifely duties. Hadn't she ever had a single moment's thought about his desires? What he needed, what he required, was a woman who knew her way around a set of balls and who wasn't afraid to get her hands dirty. He turned the knob and let himself into room 217. But it wasn't the room 217 that he knew. It was something completely different. Where once there had been a tasteful, if soulless, suite with a queen-size bed and nightstand, there was now what Jack could only describe as a sex dungeon. Whips, chains, nipple clamps, and dildos festooned the walls. A set of restraints hung low from the ceiling. What the fuck is this? Jack asked the room. This is the room of requirement. Jack hadn't noticed her until she spoke. She was an old woman with a sternly set jaw, a thin body set in loose, aged skin, who spoke with a strong Scottish accent. She emerged from the shadows like a sex mirage, clad in plaid lingerie, and, bewilderingly, a witch's hat. And since we were both here, I can only assume you require discipline. Who the fuck are you? Where's my masturbating tub? Jack stammered. I am Professor McGonagall Grill, Deputy Headmistress of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. And you, she paused and looked him up and down lasciviously, you must be very naughty. She pulled out what Jack could only assume was a wand and flicked it at him. To his shock and delight, his clothes flew off and burst into flames. With an additional artful flick of her wrist, the restraints wrapped themselves around just Jack's wrists and pulled his arms up so that he hung from the ceiling like salacious cuts of meat. Have you been a very bad boy? McGonagall asked. Jack relished the roll in her arrs and felt his dick stir in response. She cast a disapproving eye over him at his crotch. Now that simply won't do, she said. And she pointed her wand at his diminutive junk and yelled, Ingorgio! Jack felt a familiar and yet unfamiliar throbbing in his cock. Not like a normal erection, but like a thrumming. Drumming with blood and sex and desire and lecherous intent. A monster of an erection. He looked down and beheld a member so much larger, so much thicker, so much grander than the one he remembered. It was magic, all right. Sexy, dirty magic. Holy shit, he cried jubilantly. McGonagall rolled her eyes disparagingly. She threw off both, she threw both her wrinkled arms out and cried, Muffiato! With a swish, a red ball gag flew from the wall and clamped itself onto Jack's mouth. McGonagall circled around Jack, her stiletto heels click-clacking on the ground. That's much better. Now no one wants to hear your little outbursts, Mr. Torrance. Are you gonna behave now? Jack nodded, and McGonagall, being the harsh mistress that she so clearly was, repeatedly smacked him across his bare ass with her wand with a thwack, thwack, thwack that reverberated all through room 217. Jack moaned with exquisite pleasure. I said be quiet, McGonagall hissed, her warm breath tickling Jack's ear. She bit his earlobe hard. As Jack tried to hold in a groan, she inserted her wand into his quivering anus. My wand, she whispered, has a dragon heartstring core. And it's halfway up your ass, young man. How does that feel? Fucking amazing! Jack whimpered, drool dribbling down his chin. That's what I thought. She eased her wand out of his brown asterisk and used it to loosen Jack's restraint so that he could lie down on the floor, his fuckstick pointing in the air like an erotic Eiffel Tower, still throbbing with torturous anticipation. You're not the only one with requirements, she cooed, as she pulled off her bra, revealing her heavy, pendulous breasts that conjured in Jack's mind both thoughts of Edgar Allan Poe and furious copulation. They swung low as she bent over to pull off her panties, unveiling her witchy vagina, which was similarly subject to gravity and age. It hung, fittingly, like a wizard's sleeve. She reached out, and with a hitherto unseen lack of grace, magic, or sex appeal, grabbed an enormous pump bottle of KY lubricant and filled her hand with its slick contents. Jack raised an eyebrow, but McGonagall shrugged. I'm like 100 years old, she said, a little testily. Cut me a fucking break. With her snatch lathered, frothing, and ready to go, McGonagall lowered herself onto Jack's turgid love wand. Jack was glad for McGonagall's magical enhancement. The cock he'd walked into room 217 with would have been like a hot dog in a hallway otherwise. As it was, their genitals fit together like filthy puzzle pieces, creating an ultimate image of such pornographic fervor that it would have made even Trishkian blush. Stupid words. McGonagall rode him like a camel, stranded in the dead center of the Sahara desert, moaning and grinding with delight. Just as Jack could feel himself on the brink of a magnificent orgasm, McGonagall stopped, stood, and pulled her underpants back on. She flicked her wand lazily in his direction, and the enormous cock shriveled back, diminishing and diminutive, all the way back to the way it had been. The ball gag disappeared with a... What? Where? Why? Jack moaned. His balls ached horribly. You were here for discipline, McGonagall replied tartly. Nothing more. Now be gone. And with that, she turned herself into a cat and skittered off into the darkness. Now bequeathed with balls bluer than the Rockefeller Sapphire, Jack rolled on the cold floor of the sex dungeon in pain, disappointment, and mostly a very profound sense of confusion and betrayal. This was all Wendy's fault. If only she'd fucked him earlier, he wouldn't have gotten into this magical mess. Cupping his man bits in his hand, Jack scurried out of room 217 and back down the halls of the Overlook in search of some boxer shorts. And maybe an axe.
That was Jack Torrance as written by last month's winner, Maggie Takuda Hall.
She works for a rival bookstore, but we've come to love her anyway.
Yeah, she's nice.
Our next character revolves around the ghost that wet Jack's whistle, if you know what I'm saying. He let Jack out of the pantry, if you know what I'm saying. He makes a mean imaginary martini, the Overlook's eternal bartender, Lloyd.
Lloyd. Scanning the Colorado room, you could hardly tell that there'd been close to 100 people through that evening, Lloyd thought as he meticulously wiped out each of his brandy snifters and highball glasses with a white towel. All the bar stools had returned to their proper positions, and the roar from earlier in the night had gradually silenced. The last customer he served felt like decades ago. Lloyd looked out the window, watching the snow flutter all around. Things were peaceful, but he was not at rest. Working as a bartender was not all he thought it would be. He was lonely. How could you speak to hundreds of people a day and still feel so utterly unbearably alone? They only wanted one thing from him, and that was the booze he was serving. He'd be lucky to get polite small talk from the guests, and any flirting was just a cheap trick for a cheaper bar tab. And it worked. Every once in a while, he would try to get a frustrated husband or nervous groom to be just a little too hammered, to get them to open up to him a bit on a more personal level. He longed to follow one of these gentlemen up to their suite, to press his mouth against theirs, to slowly part their lips with his tongue, to feel their rough beards against his clean-shaven skin. But, given the times, Lloyd knew he was asking too much from these prestigious men, though he knew they wouldn't care about their image anymore once they'd succumbed to the pleasures he knew he could show them. Just like the drink, they would crawl back for more. Oh, how he longed to live in a time of sexual liberation.
Turning from the window, Lloyd was surprised to see that he had another customer. A man in his 30s was pounding his fist desperately at the bar. He realized this must be the new caretaker, Jack. How had he snuck in so quietly? Lloyd gathered his composure just as the man looked up and grinned at him. "Hi, Lloyd," said Jack. "A little slow tonight, isn't it?" He agreed with the man, looking him over. He was incredibly good-looking, the rustic type. He was dressed in clothing Lloyd had never seen before. There was always new styles coming through the Overlook Hotel. He seemed extremely disheveled, and Lloyd could sense that there was only one thing that could soothe this bear of a man. "What'll it be?" he asked. Jack went into a long rant about how much money he had in his pocket and something about the place called 7-Eleven that Lloyd had never heard of. And as he went on, Lloyd found himself staring over the stranger's body, lingering on the tuft of hair poking from the shirt. Lloyd desperately wanted to nestle his head against that chest, to breathe in deep and smell his manliness. Lloyd's flesh started to heat up almost as if he were on fire. "I want you to set me up with 20 martinis, and even 20, just like that," Jack ordered. Lloyd loved the way Jack commanded him. He could tell this man's thirst for alcohol was as strong as his hunger for a human touch. Lloyd slowly poured the gin and vermouth into the mixing glass filled with ice cubes. His cock began to stir, thinking about the tail in front of him as he stirred the cocktail before him. As Lloyd started to pour the first martini, Jack was fumbling around his pockets. "I seem to be monetarily light," Jack said with a sheepish grin, melting Lloyd into a puddle. "That's okay, sir. Your credit is good here, sir," Lloyd replied, returning the grin. He couldn't help but watch Jack's lips as he guzzled down the first drink, smashing the glass upon completion. The tinkling of the glass startled Lloyd, but the bold act tickled him. He desperately wanted this man. "Sir, have you ever had sex on a beach?" "For variety, sir," asked Lloyd, pouring him a second martini. Jack replied that he did with his wife. Jack replied that what he did with his wife was between him and her, and down the second glass faster than the first. Lloyd got the impression their relationship was stale. Jack smashed the second glass. This encouraged him to continue. "I was talking about the drink, sir. How about a wet pussy?" Jack gave a half grunt, half laugh, and then played along. "Well, I guess I like both. What about you, Lloyd? You like a good wet pussy?" Lloyd stiffened his back and replied that really wasn't to his taste. He wasn't much into peach schnapps. Jack Grunt laughed again. God, it was a sexy laugh. And said, "No, I guess it's not to your taste. I'm guessing you're more into a cock-sucking cowboy." Lloyd could feel his face go hot again. He was puzzled by how Jack was playing along. Could this go somewhere? Would they soon be in the presidential suite giving it to each other like madmen? Lloyd's heart fluttered. He shifted his stance to discreetly adjust the growing erection in his trousers. "Yes, sir," stammered Lloyd. That is more to my taste, sir. I also do love a long, slow, comfortable screw against the wall." Lloyd's trembling hands served Jack his third martini. Jack took the martini back like water. "I get the impression we're not just talking about drinks here, Lloyd." The two eyes met, and Lloyd felt the spark between them grow. He closed his eyes, and he leaned over the bar to kiss Jack. He leaned further and further forward, and their lips still did not meet. When Lloyd opened his eyes, Jack was gone. Had he scared him away somehow? Lloyd quickly dropped his trousers around his ankles and tugged himself off rigorously, releasing the tension that had been built. Sopping up about 8 Kleenexes and pulling his trousers back up, all Lloyd could think about was how much Jack belonged there, at the Overlook Hotel, with him, and what would need to be done to keep him there forever.
And that was Amanda Simpson's take on Lloyd, the dirty bartender of the Overlook Hotel.
So finally, we have the character who can hear you calling out in the night. He wants you to stay out of room 217, Dick Halloran.
Dick Halloran. The first time he saw a princess cake, Dick Halloran fell in love. The sensual smoothness of green marzipan. Such delicate red and white layers, and the prissy flower perched on the very top. He wanted to tuck into it, and not with a fork. Dick was only 12 at the time, and it was his cousin Lucia's 15th birthday party, so truly tucking in wasn't an option. But when the family was gathered around opening presents, he did take his piece of cake to the bathroom, put it down on the toilet lid, and spastically spray his own brand of cream onto the plate. After that, Dick couldn't stop. And it wasn't just with cakes. All kinds of food called to him. Steaming tamales, juicy cantaloupes, golden rotisserie chickens, creamy hummus. He wanted to be inside of them, deep inside of them. As a teenager, there were few activities more tantalizing than a trip to a grocery store, where Dick would conceal his rigid boner in the waist of his pants and proceed to caress and sniff all of the objects of his desire. It was allowed, even encouraged. People considered him a very knowledgeable guy when it came to food. Dick sure knows how to whip up a quiche, his mother was always boasting. If only she knew. Luckily for Dick, nobody batted an eyelash when he started working in kitchens and eventually became a cook. But after an incident with a catering company in which he couldn't explain where half of the party's caviar had gone, nor why he smelled quite so pungently of the sea, Dick decided he would have to commit or quit. The thing was, sex with people had always been underwhelming. Dick was telepathic, had been this way since childhood, so there was no mystery there. Oh, not again, he'd blurt out right before JoJo blew his load early or Patty tried to sneak around back with her index finger. It was his fault, after all. It wasn't like he hadn't seen this coming. And so he applied for a job at an isolated luxury hotel in the Rockies called The Overlook. From what he had gathered, the immense hotel would offer a huge amount of privacy, and because of its remote location, boast several storerooms, all packed to the gills with every kind of goodie Dick had ever fantasized about. Rows of koi tang canisters and handsome sacks of flour posed silently, lasciviously on their shelves. What do you think of our kitchen setup here, Mr. Halloran? The manager asked him in his interview. Dick, who was experiencing a level of ecstasy equal only to that of a pedophile at a water park, he managed a slight nod. From then on, it was an orgy every night. Oh, it's all right. I don't mind closing up things on my own, he told his staff. And then, alone at last, Dick prepared calzones, or a meatloaf, or a chocolate souffle, whatever his appetite called for, and violated it. Slowly at first, but building up to an aerobic frenzy that covered him in all manner of juices. For a time, all was well. Dick felt perfectly relaxed and fulfilled. This, he thought, stretching out post-coital on a stainless steel work table, is how people in relationships must feel. But then came winter. The Overlook was set to shut down, and he, Dick, was to stay in a swanky pad in Miami until spring. He was overcome with despair. Yes, certainly, he could visit grocery stores, could sniff pineapples, and even give it good to a Cuban sandwich or two. But he had grown attached to the Overlook. It had a power over him. It filled him with giddy madness. Dick fucked harder, better, and more creatively in that kitchen than he had ever fucked before in his life. On the morning before his departure, Dick ceremoniously peeled the business end of a large cucumber. He lifted a pan of macaroni and cheese from the oven and removed a layered jello mold from the walk-in fridge. Hello, beautifuls, Dick whispered as he unzipped his pants. He ran the head of his erection along the slippery ridges of the blushing raspberry jello. Here comes Dick, he called. From nowhere, he switched off between hot and cold, groaning with from there, he switched off between hot and cold, groaning with pleasure as he penetrated each dish anew. Yes, oh, how do you like that? He asked the macaroni. Because, and this still got him every time, he didn't already know. When he had worked himself up, Dick stuffed the slippery cucumber into his ass, the cool tip prodding him just right, the rhythm getting fast, quick, the table banging along with him, and then, why, hello, came the gentle voice of a woman. Dick bent over a chunky tray of jello and macaroni, his left hand precisely pinning the cucumber in his ass, looked up with a start. Before him was a tall, gawky woman dressed in overalls that were somehow also a dress. He was intrigued for a moment, and then he scolded himself being too involved in his lovemaking to see this coming. I'm Mrs. Torrance, Dick finished, recovering his senses. Of course, the winter caretaker's wife. He considered whether or not he ought to move out of his compromising position. Looks like you could use a hand, she said politely. Suddenly, Dick could see exactly where this was going, and for the first time, his vision of the near future was very arousing. With great anticipation, Dick climbed up on the table and crouched on all fours. He lowered his cock and then his balls into the warm, thick mush of food and sighed. With that, Mrs. Torrance took a firm hand onto the cucumber. She and Dick pumped together, smoothly, his pleasure growing sharper and sharper, until with a crescendo of loose flatulence, Dick collapsed onto the table. The sperm-infused casserole squelched against his body. Mrs. Torrance had a look of rosy delight on her face. Well now, she said, you're making me hungry. Give me a bowl. Everybody knows macaroni is better with some hot dog in it.
Come on!
Dick chuckled and rolled over onto his back. He was pleasantly surprised to be enjoying a woman like this. You sure you need a bowl? He asked, motioning her to his cheese-muddled crotch. But Dick Halloran was pleased that he already knew the answer. Next time, we'll make it a chili dog, he purred, as Mrs. Torrance licked her lip and began to gather her hair.
I assume she would have corrected me.
Sure.
I wouldn't have. He said, hi, I'm Casey Childers, and that's Childers, by the way, not Childers.
I know, but a lot of people say it wrong. If they ask me, I tell them, but otherwise.
But otherwise, you announce yourself as you walk into the room.
As I walk into the room. Kick the door in, that's Childers.
Childers, not Childers.
Just in case you were wondering. That was Dick Halloran, as written by Kamala Pulagandla.
That's the one.
Kamala Pulagandla. And that's our show. We hope you like it. If you don't, that's great. We're learning.
Shipwreck out.
This show is all introduction. Support us on Kickstarter.